always, stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Forbidden Book Group studio in Doppeltown, USA, it's Necro, and I'm a pod with your host, Mike Stoffola, Mike Moncada, episode 70, Patrick Ness's A Monster Calls, a story about stories and a boy and a tree. And now, a Necronomapod!
Those found without specific military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
So here we are. We have an apology to make.
We have no apologies. We just have explanations.
We have just explanations. Yeah, apologies are really only explanations anyway, no matter.
You know, that's kind of true. Explanation with a sad face.
With a sad face. So last time we picked Helter Skelter because you're going to be brave and do a sort of an experiment and do a true crime book as a horror novel. But what happened?
I didn't have the stomach for it. I have to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Though I did, I read basically all through the murder, in the gory details, up to the pictures, saw the pictures. There were some pictures of dead people.
Yeah.
And I said, oh my God, I don't want to do this.
Yep. And so,
so you said, though I did pick around in the back of the book, just because I always like to see what happens.
Yeah, everybody's. Justice is served.
And I think I did, I said to Mike,
Yes?
Let's reenact.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wussy Radio Playhouse starring Mike and Mike. Hello, Mike?
Why are you calling at this hour? It's 4 o'clock in the morning.
Do we really have to read?
Why? Certainly not.
Good, let's read something else. Okay. I don't have the stomach for it.
Say, how about we read something that's for children?
Yes, perfect. And Little Women it was. No, you know what it was is that I said, it's funny, I was at dinner at somebody's house a few weeks ago telling them about our podcast, and this person who I never met before, who's an avid reader, asked me, well, why do you read horror? Uh-huh. Why do you read horror? Uh-huh. And I said, I think it's because you get a vicarious experience of fear without having to really be afraid of something really.
Yeah, without actually really being confronted with it.
Yeah, like with a real thing that could really happen. Because, you know, we all know, most likely, that there won't be a zombie attack. Though I often pray for it.
Yes.
And there aren't Charles Manson, those people, Sharon Tate, the Folgers heiress, they were really killed.
Yeah.
And I read horror to get some pleasure, frankly. There's a pleasurable experience for me.
Yep.
This reading it was not pleasurable. It was definitely voyeuristic.
Yeah.
And
made you feel a little too complicit.
Yeah.
As if their deaths were a performance for you.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and they kind of were a performance for the country.
They were.
You know.
That's exactly how it was
so
used.
Rightly or wrongly. And, you know, frankly, I probably got through the worst part of the book. Because the rest is really just a courtroom drama. But the first part, and so
yeah, you were done. Yeah, so you said,
and I
yeah.
deal with hard things all day, and I just like I don't want to do a yeah. real. I don't want to do reality.
No, you want a little bit of fantasy in there, a little distancing. Yeah, interesting, right. Interesting. That's
so. What did you think about that when I asked you to do that? Did you think I was a pussy?
No, I thought it was really. I was surprised by your reaction. But when I thought about it, I wasn't very. It kind of made sense, and I actually had not started reading it, so I didn't. And I was actually I had meant to, get 100 pages under my belt before we sat down here today, to talk about what we are going to talk about. But I never did. So, I don't know. I still might try to read a bit of it.
You probably should.
Yeah.
You'll probably like it.
You know, because, you know, I'm really pretty depraved.
There's something about a picture of a... Because one of the killers... he wasn't a killer. He was one of the Manson family.
Yeah.
He was found dead from a Russian roulette. Except the gun was wiped clean. Uh-huh. And there were seven bullets. Or six bullets.
Yeah.
One shot.
Yeah.
So pretty much this guy was murdered.
Yeah.
But there's a picture of him dead. One of those grainy black and white pictures. And that just sends me over the edge for some reason.
So I seem to remember, at least in the... Because I haven't picked up a copy of this book in a long time. I actually never laid hands on it, which is why I didn't start reading it. But I seem to remember that the actual bodies in the photographs are whited out.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. Yeah. If the book had been published today, those pictures wouldn't just be there.
We can get off this book, but I think what was interesting is how much, because I got through the part, what is in the... kind of the consciousness of that murder and then what really happened is very different. Because I always thought certain things had happened, that much more desecration of bodies and things. I thought those had happened. I mean, you hear people talk about those things, and no, they didn't cut the fetus out, the baby out of Sharon Tate.
Oh, really?
No.
See, that's surprising to me.
They wanted to, but they didn't. Yeah. Or one person
they
wanted to.
They were on a schedule.
They were on a schedule. So stuff like that was like, okay.
Yeah.
But that they murdered probably 30 people.
Yeah.
All told.
Yeah. I mean, I remember several years ago, there was yet another excavation at Spahn Ranch, or one of the country places.
Yeah, Spahn Ranch. Yeah.
Yep. Where they, and they were trying to find, that there might be more bodies buried, on the ranch or something like that. Did you get to the part where they were living at Dennis Wilson's house? One of the Beach Boys?
Yes. Yeah, I got all the way up to time they were captured.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
But
wow.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, I don't want to read that.
So instead we read something else that has nothing to do with reality.
And we didn't tell anybody we were going to read this.
So. I did, actually.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, no.
Did you put something on the website?
I put something on the website.
Oh, okay, good.
Yep. And I put a comment on our last post so that people who are, just sit checking, refreshing and refreshing our website in case an update comes through, they caught it. So I think the word has gone out to everybody.
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 All of the people. Yeah. Can I just add one more thing before we get off of Helter Skelter? Do you know what Helter Skelter means?
Helter Skelter means, I think I used to know, but I don't anymore.
It's the it's what they call roller coasters in England.
Oh. Helter Skelter. Well, that makes a lot of sense in the song now. When you get to the bottom, you go back to the top of the slide, and you stop, and you turn, and you go for a ride.
Yeah.
Oh. I'll promise not to use Helter Skelter or any covers of the song Helter Skelter for the end of this. Yeah. No, I won't do that.
Anyway, all right. This book.
So what we actually did read is A Monster Calls by Patrick Ness, from an idea by Siobhan Dowd.
Yeah.
Who died. She's a cancer victim, oddly enough.
Oh.
And she had a couple of young kids.
So did she come up with the idea, or was the idea influenced by her death?
She came up with the idea. She must have communicated it to somebody, and Patrick Ness picked it up and actually wrote the book. Not using any outline of hers, it was an idea.
It was just a germ of an idea.
Yeah, just encapsulated in a sentence or two.
Well, apparently. It's interesting that he puts her on the
So maybe they're
the co-creator.
Friends. Yeah,
on this book. So what did you think? Do you want to tell it, since probably people aren't?
Yeah. So this is a YA sort of novel picture book. It's a very
It's mythic.
It's mythic, and it's kind of an allegory, I guess. Actually, it's sort of an anti-allegory. But it's about this boy who his mom is bald, and sleeping late all the time, and they never once in the book say that she is dying until the very end. She never says she has cancer.
Right.
They never say that she's they just avoid that all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
But she's dying of cancer. And the boy, who is probably, I don't know, 13,
yeah,
maybe?
12, 13.
Is not dealing with it very well. He wants it to be secret. He doesn't want to pay any attention to it. He certainly doesn't want his grandmother to come take care of him, and much less have to go live with his grandmother. His mom and dad are divorced. His dad lives in America. I guess he'd prefer to go with him, maybe. This thing's just sort of play out. That's the reality of this, of the situation.
Right.
The monster in this is you. It's a yew tree.
Well, it's like the Green Man.
It's like the Green Man.
Except in the form of a tree.
Yeah.
It's very druidical.
Yeah. And it's, so there's this tree outside of his window, and it's, the yew tree works in a couple different ways in the book. First of all, it's a not so subtle homophone of you.
Mm-hmm.
That the tree is really part of himself, obviously. But it's also the yew tree has certain medicinal qualities that eventually comes into play in the mom's treatment. That's kind of it.
And the character of the monster is medicinal.
Yeah.
But not in the way mm-hmm. you would think.
Yeah.
Which is what I've...
Yeah, the kid is hoping
which I loved about it. That's what makes it so mythical. And,
yeah.
Yeah. The antidote mm-hmm. is like a poison.
Yes. You know that the monster is not there to
heal them. He is there to heal him.
Yeah, but it's not there to heal his mom, which is what he hopes,
and it's there to heal him in
a cauterizing way.
It's a book about I think it's a book about putting to the side binaries.
Yes.
And also it's about ending being naive. Fake innocence
mm-hmm.
about things, about how things are.
Yeah. So the book that's the situation. And the book kind of unfolds in Christmas Carol fashion.
Yeah, he gets like a visitation of this monster.
The moving tree visits him three times and tells him three stories.
And he says, "You're here because you called me, and I'm here to help." Yes. Basically, even though I'm going to try to scare the shit out of you.
And he says,
"I'm going to tell you three stories, and in the end, you have to tell me
your story,
the fourth story, and it has to be yours, and it has to be the truth."
Yes.
And the boy's like, "Fuck you, monster," but with a British accent.
Exactly. And the three stories that the monster tells, they start in a sort of very familiar way, and then by the time the
stories end... they're like once upon a time stories.
Yeah, the fables of a sort. And then, but by the time they end, the monster has undone everything that you would expected from the story. like you said, undone all the binaries. You know, he lays out what seems to be plainly good and evil. And they all get shifty and switch.
Right.
And then you can't tell in the end what's good and what's evil.
Right.
What is true and what's lie. What is,
Right.
And that's...
what's healing or what's illness.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Exactly. So he tells these three stories. And then the boy tells his story. And the boy tells the story that you know what it is. Just like the boy knows what the story is. All the way through, that he has to come to grips with the fact that he is going to lose his mother and that there is nothing he can do about it. And that he bears some guilt with it. And this is the thing that I thought was particularly wise. I mean, there's a lot that's wise about this book, but that the the horrible secret that the boy has to tell is that he wants his mother to just
be dead.
Die. He can't take this anymore.
Right.
And that is a familiar feeling.
Yes.
for
people. If you're honest, it's a very familiar feeling.
Yes. And you feel bad. You really feel bad. But, you know, it's perfectly natural and it's almost universal.
So what the monster teaches him is that you can feel and think different things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they are.
Yes.
There aren't anything more, anything less than that.
Yes.
So you can feel like you don't want your mother to go, and you can feel like you want her dead.
Mm-hmm.
And none of those things cause anything.
Yes.
And they're just what you feel.
Yeah, it's what you do that matters.
Right.
Except in this book. Because, and this is my one problem with the book.
Go ahead.
He puts that other kid in the hospital. I'm sorry. I don't care how much he was picking on you. There are consequences to that.
Yeah, he needed to go in the hospital.
Yeah, he needed a good ass kicking.
And, he really did.
He really, really did.
But
hospitalizing somebody, I don't know what it's like in England where this book takes place. But in America, you would not be able to ever go back to school again.
Well, but you know what? The kid was being bullied.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
I don't know. It seemed...
Yeah, but zero tolerance. Well, anyway.
Well, we're different here.
We are different
here. Our priorities are very strange about what you'll zero tolerate.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure.
You know, because there was that scene where the kid's getting just picked on and the girl
stands up for him
and then he sides with his bullies because he doesn't want to get picked on again.
Well, actually, that's what I thought at first, but I think what he really
wanted... Well, that's how they show it in the book.
Yeah, that's what they show in the book, but... at the end, you kind of get this idea that what he wants is he wants the punishment that he's been getting because of these thoughts he's been having about wanting his mother to just die.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so
so what was the so I'm gonna, I'll ask you, but I'll answer my own question first.
All right.
Like, what if there was anything that you had a visceral sort of was there anything you had a visceral response to in the book? And what would it have been? And I'll tell you what mine was.
All right.
It's when the grandmother walked in. So the kid goes, the monster tells this story about, and in the story he destroys this house.
Yes.
And then the kid kind of comes out of his stupor, his magical storytelling stupor, and finds that he destroyed his grandmother's
precious sitting room
with like this family clock that was just everything destroyed. Yeah. And the grandmother walks in and she just starts keening.
Yes.
And I so, for some reason, I connected to that. Like, whoa. Oh, yeah. You can really get how that would.
Yeah. And then she goes, and then she walks up and she takes the one thing that he hadn't yet destroyed. There's like a cupboard or a glass cabinet, and she just pulls it over. There's twice in the book that I completely lost it. That was the first time.
That was it.
It was the first time in any of the books we have read for this podcast that I have.
That seems so real.
It was emotionally real. I was when I realized that the story was following a pretty. Tried and true structure. I thought, okay, well, I see how this is going to go, and I'll just go along with it. And I was intellectualizing it, and that was the moment when anything I did to intellectualize it was just thrown out the window. It was a pure emotional response.
Mm-hmm. What was the second one?
It was the last scene.
Mm-hmm.
When he finally says to his mom that he doesn't want her to go, and she goes, "Yeah,
because the monster's like, yeah, let's see the next piece."
So, I finished listening to it on Friday night, a couple nights ago, and then I was just kind of a wreck.
Because I read it in 2 hours. Yeah. I went to a coffee shop and read it, and I was like, yeah, I'm done.
I don't need to read anything else now. Anyway, so we haven't asked the question that we always ask: do we like the book? And my answer is, of course, yes.
Yes, I
like
the
very
book.
Much.
I did like the book.
This is a very good book. It's not the kind of book that
I don't think it's really a horror book.
It's, you know, it's kind of a book about horror. It's not scary at all. I mean, his first reaction to the monster is to not be scared of it. Remember the
right.
You know, this tree that he's looking at in the front yard,
right?
Like, picks up roots, comes walking over to him, and like reaches into his window. That's just, you know, the scene from Poltergeist, which is terrifying. The tree reaching in through the window.
Yeah.
He goes, you know, that's not scary. This is just make believe. Real scary is happening upstairs with my mom dying.
Right.
Which brings us back to the Helter Skelter thing about, you know, fantasy is not really scary. Reality is actually scary.
Reality is actually scary.
Yeah. and so, which kind of works around to the, if we wanted to touch on what the virtue of horror novels are. In this book, you hear these tales, and it's a way to come around to accepting that which is scary
in life. Yeah. Because because stories are a way to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that, mm-hmm. you know, the real grim stories were scary stories.
Yeah.
That, and the good mythic stories have, make you face, you know, initiate you into the realities of life. And
yeah.
And then give you a way to handle it.
Yes.
Give you a code of some sort. Yeah,
effectively or not.
And the code is passed in through the stories.
Yeah.
You decipher them, and they unpack as you get, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. and they grow with you.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that people want to take away from. I think there's a movement, especially for children, to take that stuff away from children so they don't experience anything bad or whatever. And it's like, boy, you are not equipping them deal with the real world.
Yeah. You are not growing children, you're potting plants.
Yeah. And the real rhythms of life and stuff like that. So
that's interesting. I mean, this is not the kind of book that I would recommend. I mean, would you, like, so you, if you knew somebody who's grieving, and we do,
I would totally recommend this.
You would recommend this book.
You know, I was thinking about that because I was thinking about clients and stuff. Like, would I recommend this book to them? And I think I would.
Yeah.
I think I would. Probably, yeah, I think I would. Especially if somebody is feeling guilt over feeling
resentment.
Or not resentment, but feeling relieved.
Yeah.
That somebody's dead.
Yeah.
You know, which often happens.
Yeah.
Which usually happens.
Usually happens. It's
not like if a child dies or...
No.
But when somebody's been suffering, there's usually a relief, right? Yes.
Just to have to see that suffering day in and day out. You know, you can't help but personalize it. I mean, what you do, what happens to you in your life is personal. It's always and only personal.
So you recently had your father-in-law died.
Yes.
My dad died 2 years ago, yep. And my good friend's dad just died the week mm-hmm. we were reading this.
Yeah.
So did you have any, did it fit into you, anything that you're experiencing personally? Or?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. When I was listening to this and processing after I'd finish it, I was thinking more about my father-in-law than I had in some time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think about him all the time, mm-hmm. but like really thinking about, you know, the last couple of years and his slow, painful decline. It rang my bell.
I don't think like most of the horror that we read does that particularly.
No.
I mean, some of the things we've read, like The Man on the Ceiling,
mm-hmm.
which I think is like a related to this book,
yes,
very much, yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
The Swedish zombie thing.
Oh yeah, the Handling the Undead.
Those are probably closer to reality.
Yeah,
reality experiences, emotional reality.
Mm-hmm.
I think than some of the other things that we read, but. So that's why it's a little different.
Yeah.
To read this.
No, it was
in the context of our podcast.
I mean, so many of the books that we read, especially the particularly pulpy ones, the horror is so over the top that it's explicitly not dealing with the reality of the situation.
Right. It's true.
you know, the zombies.
The horror is just the conceit.
For, the horror, yeah.
For
yeah,
a fun time.
Yeah, exactly. The vampire myth that, you know, that the undead is, you know, a fantasy release from the finality of death. That, you know, that's an escape route.
Right.
It's not, which is specifically not dealing with the finality of death. It's the opposite of mourning. But this one is all about mourning, and it's about mourning. I mean, you don't get to the mourning of after his mom dies. I mean, the last thing that happens in this book is that she dies.
It's not really about, it's about dying.
It's about more dying.
It's about death.
Yeah.
Well, it's about death too, but it's about dying.
Yeah. And about, you know, about the mourning that happens.
Pre-mourning.
Yeah. Right. The mourning that happens before the funeral, while the person's still there.
So what did you think of the stories? Because I liked the stories. I thought the stories...
The stories are really... They're
like so tight. They're like these little nuggets. These tight little nuggets.
Of narrative. And they have they're each split into two chapters. And right at the chapter split is where the story turns. Because it
happens... What you think it's supposed to...
You think it's supposed to end. Yeah. Like Act 1 and Act 2. Like that the Sondheim musical, Into the Woods, where at the end of Act 1, everybody, it's all look happy endings. And then you realize that there's Act 2, and everything gets undone. Divorces, deaths, disobedient children.
Yeah, like, right. And then the thing about these stories is, like, where does the real virtue lie?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So
I like that you compared it to Dickens, because I never thought of that, but it really is like that.
Yeah, it's, you know, the three visitations. You know, the other thing that it reminded me of, it just occurred to me as I was reading the very beginning of it. There's I forget the guy's name now. M.R. James, the Victorian, librarian, antiquarian, and ghost story writer, has a book called The Ash Tree. And that's a story called The Ash Tree. And I was thinking very much about that, because the whole thing's about this tree that's outside this window and the horrors that lie within. And it's a really an effective story, and they turn out to be gigantic prehistoric spiders, and you get a really thorough ick feeling when you discover what's going on with that tree. In this one, I mean, you know, it sort of plays with that a little bit. But you know, when the tree starts moving and you have this ancient sort of wood spirit that's supposed to be a monster, but is actually a tonic.
Monster tonic.
Monster energy drink.
The truth is often monstrous.
The truth is frequently monstrous.
The truth of how things are.
Yep. I mean, the book.
It reminded me of, did you ever read, what's his name's book, Iron John?
Robert Bly.
No. Yeah, this is an Iron John story. I mean, this is...
Oh.
Because Iron John's a monster. Iron John is... People are afraid of him, but he teaches this boy how to grow up, basically.
Okay. Sure.
And... No, Iron John's a really old story. Yeah, it's like a green man that Iron John is.
Is it a Grimm story? One of the Grimm's tales?
No, it's more of a folk.
Okay.
Does he have does Iron John show up in a Grimm's story? Probably aspects of him.
Okay.
I'm
not familiar with it. When I first moved to the upper Midwest in the vicinity of Doppeltown, it was the heyday of Iron John and Robert Bly.
It's a really good book.
That's what I hear. And people kind of like roll their eyes and poo poo it now. It's so early 90s.
Because it makes people think of men with drums and feathered hats, and sitting around talking about their manness. But
anyway. That's interesting. That's interesting. And you were saying this reminded you of the Green Man. Is it the Green Man or the?
Yeah, the Green Man. You know, the the same thing, you know. It's like a monster, but he's...
Mm-hmm.
It's... it seems like it's taking something... It's the hero's journey, you know, something gets taken from you, mm-hmm. but then you're given something.
Yeah.
Right? You're given something even better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what this is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, this kid is now given a way to live, to cope with his mom. His feelings around his mom's death. And he didn't have that.
Yeah, he didn't have, he was completely shut down about it.
And he had to do some horrible things. But it required horrible things to be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Well, the book is short, and I suspect that our discussion is going to be short. So is it cocktail time?
Yes.
Let's have a cocktail.
All right, what are we trying to drink here?
Well, let me tell you.
Because we wanted to do something with yew berries, but they're poisonous.
Alas, they're poisonous. But with potential curative qualities. What we're having, we're gonna take some tree sap. That is to say, real maple syrup.
Which is tree sap.
Which is tree sap.
Legitimately tree sap.
Exactly. Take a tablespoon of that. It's like half a shot of it. Two shots of blended scotch, some cheap scotch. You don't want the good stuff.
Yeah.
And then about a shot of dry vermouth. Stir that together with ice, and then strain it into a glass into a glass filled with rocks. Garnish with a maple
twig.
Could
you put it in a shaker? Mm-hmm. And shake it with the ice in it, and then pour that into the glass.
You could.
Of ice.
You could. You could. You could do all that. But as long as you, in the end, you go out and you cut yourself a switch. No, kind of just get a maple twig, preferably with a leaf on it.
Or a yew stem.
Or a yew stem.
Don't
do that. No, maple twig. And then use that for your stir. Yeah. And we're going to call that tree sap.
Tree sap.
There it is. Chin chin.
All right. Take your medicine.
It's free. So we should pick another book.
All right.
What do you want to pick?
Helter Skelter.
No, no.
In Cold Blood. No. The Executioner's Song. The Prime of Miss Jean Brody.
The Confessions of Nat Turner. Hell's Angels. Let's just go down and see if we can find something.
Well, you know, it's March.
It is March.
It is the anniversary of...
Oh, that's right.
And we were talking about rereading...
Wow. Our first book?
Yeah.
World War Z?
World War Z.
Wow.
But I don't know. I don't know what I think about that. But I'd like to start it off with a bang,
We could do a book that we've been talking about forever.
Oh, what was that?
Well, there's a...
We already did that one, the House of
Leaves. Leaves. Yeah. I know. Remember that when we were sitting in the back of the classroom making those fart noises?
The highest praise ever.
We could read Gene Wolfe's piece.
Yeah, I don't want to read that.
No?
That's something you've been wanting to read.
I know. Well, absolutely.
That's true.
But it's been sitting there for a long time. Other books that have been sitting on the shelf for a long time.
We Have Always Lived in the Castle.
Yeah, we read that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. We've actually been pretty good. We've purged a couple that we didn't ever want to read. I don't know. What kind of book do you want to read?
I don't know.
You have no idea.
I have no idea. How about the new Stephen King book?
No.
It's gotten great reviews.
Well, he's a pretty good writer right here, that Stephen
King. How about Anne Rice? She's writing about angels now.
Oh, God, no.
Or
I can't do it.
No, werewolves. She's writing about werewolves now.
Oh. Not writing about Jesus anymore?
No, she moved on to werewolves.
The first zombie.
You know they're going to make The Body Thief into a movie.
They really should.
Yeah. It's a good book.
That's what I hear.
All right, yeah, because we don't do those two.
No, and we don't do Clive Barker either.
We don't do Clive Barker.
And we don't do Dean Koontz.
Oh, God, thank God.
Do you want to do something cheesy? You want to do something?
No, I want to do something we can,
live with?
Teeth into, that we can live with.
How about Jack Ketchum's Off Season?
What's that one about?
It's about hunting out of season.
Hunting what?
I'm not sure. What could people possibly hunt out of season?
Werewolves, people, hunting man.
The most dangerous game. that was one that I brought up last week. I mean, last time.
Uh-huh. Was I enthusiastic about it?
No. Apparently packs quite a punch.
Does it?
Yep.
All right, let's read it.
All right, Off Season by Jack Ketchum. Let's get out of here. It's dank.
Oh, yeah, I forgot we were in the basement. Yeah.
We were totally in the basement just now.
I know, now we're not.
Now we're not.
It's the magic of radio.
So, any further words on What a Monster Calls? What a Monster Calls?
I would recommend it. I don't think it's a child's book, frankly.
I think it's it's a teenager's book.
Yeah, it's a teenage book, but I think it deals with sensitive themes.
Yes. No, it was good. I'm glad we read it.
I would like to know other people's opinions. If there's anybody out there who cares to give us feedback about, like, reading true murders as entertainment.
Yeah. Now, I read a book not so long ago. I read Joyce Carol Oates' book, Zombie, which was
I really wanted to read that.
Yeah, I'll give it to you. It's a thinly fictionalized account of the Jeffrey Dahmer murders. And and I don't think she... I mean, you could actually, research, and I'm sure people have written, true crime accounts of Jeffrey Dahmer's crime spree. And I'm going to be getting from the library pretty soon here a book... a graphic novel that just got published called My Friend Dahmer, which is about this comic artist who went to school with Jeffrey Dahmer was his friend, as much as Jeffrey Dahmer had friends.
Right.
But he knew him when he was a teenager. And so this comic book is about that.
I mean, there's one thing about reading about Jeffrey Dahmer, and there's reading about Dexter. Yeah. Now, Dexter... I enjoy reading about Dexter. Well, mm-hmm. To a point. But Dahmer?
Yeah.
Because I was in Milwaukee.
You were in Milwaukee at the time.
Well, he was there doing his thing.
Yeah. No, I remember a friend of mine, a high school friend of mine, he had come out maybe 2 years before he started killing people. It was not a safe environment to be in, really, Milwaukee, north side of Milwaukee. It was a lot.
No. But when
Jeffrey Dahmer got arrested and the whole story came out, he just did not go out for a couple of weeks at all.
Well, it's funny because where I lived, I could smell the chocolate from the factory Jeffrey Dahmer.
The Ambrosia chocolate factory,
which they knocked down.
Yeah.
Because of him.
Because of him, along with the apartment building they lived in. They just scraped it. Yeah, so...
I wonder if they moved that factory somewhere.
I hope they did and, renamed it.
Yeah.
Because the chocolate's not to blame.
Never blame the chocolate.
Never blame the chocolate.
If there's anything I learned from reading A Monster Calls, never blame the chocolate.
So I'm very curious to read this. But the Joyce Carol Oates novel is, a different character. His crimes are slightly different. But there are real serious similarities. Like he's doing amateur brain surgery on these people. Yeah, to turn them into zombies and the things go wrong. And it's all from his point of view. But at the end, he gets away.
Does he succeed? Oh, he gets away.
Yeah, he just, he hides his crimes and continues and just, keeps going.
See, I'd much rather read a serial killer book like, the incredible Mr. Limpet. Ripley.
Talented
Mr. Ripley. I'd rather read that kind of serial killer.
Sure.
Because he's sort of a... he kind of fell into it.
Yeah.
Versus these people who are performing surgery. I don't know what it is about those.
I know, it's horrifying.
It's horrifying.
Yeah.
Those probably should be the ones I should be reading, but I don't want to read those.
God forbid you get used to it, reading that kind of stuff.
It's like the Human Centipede or...
Oh. So I read the synopsis of the sequel.
To the Human Centipede? Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, I just wanted to read a synopsis so I could be done.
Yes, and that's what I read. I did.
It, and I kind of blocked most of it out, but it looked pretty horrible.
You know, there's that first Dexter book we ever read, and there's that one scene where they find that body.
Oh, the second book.
Was it the second book?
The second book. With the limbs on
it. I can't get that out of... I think about that sometimes.
I was just discussing that last week with some of my coworkers, and we were talking about how I think the series is much better than the books.
Yes.
Because they diverge soon, and they avoid the misstep that
book and they three took was. Some huge, painful steps.
Yeah.
In the TV series.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I have stopped watching it. I should start again. But I was going to describe what happened in the second book, and I was like, no. You know, I'm not going to do that to you folks.
No.
I'm not going to put that in your brain.
Yeah, it's in my brain.
So,
anyway. But it did make me, reading the beginning of Helter Skelter did make me want to watch some Roman Polanski movies. And I did watch a little bit of Valley of the Dolls again to see Sharon Tate.
Right. So I've never seen Valley of the Dolls.
Which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
The movie's really horrible too, but.
Yeah, did you see Fearless Vampire Killers?
I started watching it, and then it had to go back to the library, yeah. So I didn't watch it.
I thought that movie was just really, really stupid. It was like a Jerry Lewis vampire movie.
Oh, totally. And it was like Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein.
Yeah, and I did not have the tools or whatever it is to get that humor, and I just didn't.
It's very 60s.
It's very 60s.
It's very 60s. And you can tell that Roman Polanski was a horn dog.
Yeah.
Really a horn dog.
Yeah. Roman Polanski and Warren Beatty, Loose in the Hills of Hollywood. Oh,
well, but you can see where he made horrible mistakes in his life after the murder of his wife.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know? You could see where
where
that probably took him.
It took a
dark place.
Yeah.
You can see why. Well, there you go.
There you go. We have talked it out.
Very good.
We've come to grips with it.
So, what should we do? How should we end this thing?
Let's just say goodbye.
No.
Goodbye. No. All right. Let's
quietly close the page. Let's drive it to the library and put it into the book depository.
That sounds like a good plan.
Very good.
Right. Bye.
Bye.